Hello and welcome to La Pausa Pod. This week, we're going to dive into some Copa del Rey final analysis after Athletic Club beat Mallorca in La Cartuja on Saturday night, or technically Sunday morning, after extra time and penalties. Incredible scenes, really. Let's start with an overview of the game. So it finished 1-1. Athletic Club won 4-2 on penalties. The XG during that 131 minutes that was played was Athletic Club 2.17 to Mallorca's 0.52, which suggests a fairly one-sided affair, but it wasn't really the case either. Mallorca did have chances. Athletic Club dominated the ball, but Mallorca did create some chances from their big men really up front.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you look at the stats and it looks very one-sided, but again, Mallorca were prepared for that type of game. That's probably the game they wanted in some ways. It's just tough to know where to begin with this. I feel like the match, sometimes a match feels like a movie, and this match just felt like a TV series with so many different themes and changing dynamics. Just the fact that Athletic played all of extra time, you know, an absolutely defining 30 minutes of their season with guys like Munain, Raul Garcia, Vesga, players who were kind of old school Athletic. It felt like in the most important game of their season, they had, you know, the old school guys were the guys who had to bring it home for them. So it's just, again, a final is just so difficult to try and break down. It's up to know where to begin after, you know, 131 minutes of play with a rotating cast, you know, different tactics, managers changing systems. So, yeah, what comes to mind first when you think about this game?
Yeah, exactly like you said there, the rotating cast, and it was one of the most important aspects of it was how each manager used the players at their disposal. So obviously Athletic Club have more resources, they have a deeper squad, so they could get a little bit fancier, we'll say, during the game. Not that Ernesto already went wild and started changing his system too much, but he had the opportunity to kind of switch his midfield and change the dynamic. He brought on Berenguer, who obviously won the penalty shootout in the end. Fabulous option to bring on, whereas Javier Aguirre was a little bit more limited in what he did, and also he didn't want to disrupt the flow of the game too much either, because Mallorca did have them have the game where they wanted it, in that soaking up pressure, fine, but also providing a threat. So I think that's what it was. It wasn't just a six season series. It was with the same cast. It was people coming in, people going out. Ernesto Valverde kind of struggling then. You only got six substitutes to make, so you had to kind of decide who you're going to bring on, who you're going to bring off. Yuri Berchiche ended the game with the most touches for any Athletic Club player, and he was just absolutely exhausted by the end. He's not young, so it obviously took its toll on him. But they don't have a natural left back to come in, so it was a matter of what do we do here. But we'll get into the substitutes now in a minute, but we'll just kind of talk about the overall team. So there was 34 players used, 131 minutes, 43 shots, 62 crosses, 40 fouls. Huge, a real epic encounter. And I think that's what this occasion deserved. Javier Aguirre and Ernesto Valverde at the start of the game, it was just magnificent when the two of them came out, and two absolute dons of Spanish football. Javier Aguirre is just so charismatic. He's funny. He's kind of self-deprecating. He's aggressive. He's abrasive when he needs to be. Just a great character. And Ernesto Valverde just got so many layers to him. He's a photographer outside the game. He's the way he sits on the sideline thinking. It's like he's just deeply in thought during the games, and they embraced you before the game and hugging each other. And I was like, it was almost like if they had a choice, they would have went down into the bowels of the La Cartuja and had a coffee together and had a chat before the game. But obviously, they were on opposite sides then, and both very effusive in their praise of each other then before and after the games. But yeah, like you said, Mallorca got what they wanted. You could see Aguirre kind of celebrating after 90 minutes. And then when they got to extra time, they were like, okay, this is how we're going to win this game. And I know a lot of the analysis has been on Athletic Club, but Mallorca have been, it is a really incredible story. They didn't trail once in the Copa del Rey this season, 872 minutes, went to extra time on three occasions, beat some really heavy hitters in Spanish football, and it's just an awful pity that both teams couldn't win this one on Saturday night.
Yeah. You think back now and you kind of forget that the game finishes a draw. I mean, the only difference between these sides on the night was a penalty shootout. So again, Mallorca were five spot kicks away from winning in such epic fashion in this tournament, having not been behind for a single minute, soaking up so much pressure. They were so close to, you know, just an unbelievable run. And yeah, I think we can probably start at the beginning logically, but the first 20 minutes, obviously Mallorca went 1-0 up in the 21st. I don't know about you, but I think the first thing that struck me watching the match was I expected Mallorca to come out with spurts of aggression, but they weren't, you know, it's a 5-3-2 on paper. You see that with the three big centre-backs and you think, you know, there's probably going to be, Aguirre's probably going to try and limit space. They're going to try to keep it tight, force Athletic wide and defend the box. But just the aggression from the full-backs, or the wing-backs, should I say, Gio Gonzalez, Tony Lato. I mean, when you see a back five, you think they're going to defend in a five, but they were flying up the pitch to put pressure on Athletic's fullbacks, and so brave to leave the likes of Valiant 1v1 against Nico Williams. It felt like, to me, as long as they had legs in the match, that they wanted to pressure the ball and be aggressive against Athletic. And yeah, for them to start that way, get their lead, you were thinking this is going to be a tough night for Athletic now.
And especially when Dani Rodriguez took the goal, gave Mallorca the lead in the first half. It felt like Javier Aguirre had said before the game about one of the keys. It was that El País interview that you posted on Twitter that he did before it. And the question, I think, was, what's the key to winning the game? And I can't remember his exact response, but it was something like, we need to keep our mental balance, or we need to stay focused. If we're focused on everything, and I think that taking the early lead was perfect for them. And there was a moment where Athletic Club got a little bit flustered, and it's a credit to them that they were able to reel themselves back in, because there had been so much talk about this being their first big trophy in 40 years. Some of these players, most of these players, weren't even alive when they won that last trophy. All the players, I don't think anyone over 40. So all the players, none of those players were alive before that. And this is you could sense that feeling of occasion with Athletic Club, and there was almost a feeling of destiny with it. But then at the same time, you have to actually go out and win the game. And when Dani Rodriguez took that goal, which he took really well, actually, I think he placed that. Did he? He knew where he was going with that, because if you watch it then, before it even hit the back of the net, he had turned, he was gone. He knew he was gone into the back of the net.
Yeah, definitely. Just seeing that scramble in the box, it was, I know we preach about players or defenders being alive to dangerous stuff, but when the ball's just flying around in the box like that, I think there were three or four shots in quick succession and there's just bodies flying everywhere. It's tough to control, and it just felt like the perfect way for Mallorca to get ahead. They'd kept their defensive shape. They were being aggressive. To be fair, they forced that corner for the goal with pushing up to the halfway line, pressuring that Nico Williams pass, who gave the ball away. They got the corner, and then they managed to scramble one in. And then from there, like you said, the Athletic were a bit flustered. I think with the importance of the game, they probably didn't think they'd be the ones to go behind in a match like this, because Mallorca are, you know, we know what type of game they were prepared for. They've had less possession than practically everyone in all of their games in the tournament since the very early rounds against lower league sides. So, yeah, for them to find themselves in that situation, 20 minutes gone, 1-0 down. Yeah. I wonder if Valverde, we'll get onto the substitutions he made fairly soon, but I wonder how quickly Valverde thought about that first change of bringing Prados off and bringing Vesga on. Yeah, was it in his mind as soon as they'd kind of gone behind and they knew the pattern of the game that was going to set in? Or was it, you know, he got to half time and thought, you know, one tweak and we can probably bring this game back round with Vesga coming on to manage the game from deeper positions and just change how they configured that front six players or so?
I would imagine once he realised that Mallorca really were threatening on the break and really were pushing forward, that they did need a little bit more control. So the reason you might start Prados and Ruiz de Galarreta is it is slightly more chaotic than what you do get from Vesga and Galarreta. So, but within that chaos, you're also giving up a little bit of your own control going backwards. And I think once Valverde realized that Mallorca could score a second here, and if they get a second, this game is pretty much done. Obviously we don't know that, but you're it's massively uphill battle being 2-0 down. So you bring Vesga on to add that little bit more control, because Prados is still so young. He's only after breaking into the team here at the start of 2024. And I feel like when you're watching him, there isn't as much positional discipline there. And maybe that's a directive from the coaches, but it's also just being young and letting the occasional match get to you and having all that energy that you want to use up. And he was, and that can be a positive in that he was driving into the box, and he was switching with Galarreta at times, and they were they could cause problems for Mallorca. But on the other side of that, you're also not as sturdy going the other way. So yeah, we'll talk about the subs in a minute. But just on the way that the game went, so there was 8 high turnovers in the Copa del Rey final, 4 for each team. That's the fewest in any of Athletic clubs' matches this season. So They weren't allowed to play the way that they normally play. Mallorca were never going to give them that chance, especially with Larin, Muriqi, even Samu Costa being as you referred to him earlier in a message you sent to me, the Portuguese warlord. he came out this game, I think, throughout the season, and I've been kind of thinking of him as someone who could move on to make the next step to a higher level team in the summer. But he came out of this game with technically limited on the ball, but just an absolute animal in duels. He finished the game with the most duels for any player, and it was actually amazing that he didn't get booked. But yeah, I think that was kind of general flow of the game. And the big change happened for Athletic Club was when they brought Prados off at halftime for Vesga. Why do you think that Valverde did that? What do you think they were trying to achieve? What do you think that they were lacking with Prados on? And once you've answered that, do you think that he went a little bit too early with that in terms of your ability then to manipulate the game later on as it creeps towards extra time and penalties? With you've used the sub after 45 minutes. It's kind of like you need to use up every minute of the players that you have on the field and then swap them out for fresh players. They used Prados up after 45 minutes and that was a sub gone.
Yeah, I was surprised he made subs so early in the game. obviously he took Prowse off at half time. I thought Galarreta would play, would go the distance, to be honest. The fact they brought him off with after about 80 minutes, I think it was, that surprised me. But just that, the stat you mentioned on the lack of high turnovers in the match, what that basically tells us is this is a different game to what Athletic have played this season, and one in which the way that Mallorca play naturally takes away from a lot of the best things that Athletic do under Valverde. So limited transitions, Mallorca played long from the back, they took away any chance for them to really initiate that pressure. So they turned it into a slower game, one where Athletic were going to have to be more patient. And we've, this season, you know, for as good as they've been, we've not really seen them win in that fashion all too often. Only against the really poor sides at home. You think of Almeria at home, games like that. When they've played against, you know, rock solid defences like Mallorca and they've had the initiative put on them, it's a struggle. But if you think back to, what was it, three, 4 years ago now against Real Sociedad in that Copa del Rey final, the guys they started with in that match were Muniain, Raul Garcia, Berenguer, and on Saturday night, they were the three guys they brought off the bench. So I think that tells you.
And the three guys to score penalties.
Yeah, fair play. I just think that tells you these days, Athletic, although they're still a direct team, very, very front foot, very vertical, as Spanish would say, they have just about enough now to get by in these games that are slowed down by the opposition who put the initiative on you. So guys like Sunset, Nico Williams generating, Guruceta, false nine at times, although he wasn't overly involved in this match. You did ask me about Vesga now, and I've gone way off track, but Vesga, I think, was he's just had more reps in a situation like this where they're facing a team that they have to break down, more controlled. He's probably got a better passing range than Prados at this stage of Prados' career, so it was a brave one to bring him on because Vesga's not played a great deal this season. He's not had a big role in the team, but yeah, looking back now, it was he gave it just a bit more tranquility to the team, and you'd have to say it was a spot-on substitution.
Yeah, it did work out in the end, and he also scored the penalty. It also, I thought, freed up the Galarreta a little bit because Galarreta knew that Vesga had his back then too, and I think it spoke volumes that the Galarreta got such he got a standing ovation when he came off, and he was just magnificent in that game and has been all season. And we spoke about him, and I wrote about him actually when I wrote about Athletic Club earlier in the season about how a free transfer from Mallorca actually during the summer, I mean, it barely made a ripple in the transfer market news cycle. But he has really helped to solidify that team. And when you're looking at Athletic Club moving forward and just in general their depth, they finished the game with Unai Gomez, another young academy graduate, and Mikel Vesga in midfield. That's a serviceable midfield as a starting duo, even as Gomez does get more reps and that. And I think that's back to what I said earlier about Valverde having more options off the bench and being able to change the game in ways that he did. But that was it. We haven't seen Athletic Club winning these games and being able to figure this out. And it probably is a fault, or not so much a fault, but a weakness of theirs that they can't break teams down like this. And they are kind of a little bit more heavy metal than when they need to switch out of that mode, it's kind of hard for them, because also with Mallorca not giving them the chance to transition, it also removed the opportunity then for Iñaki and Nico to run in behind, which Iñaki didn't have a huge influence on the game. Nico obviously did, and we'll talk about him in a minute, but that also then, as a knock-on effect, reduced Guruceta's ability to drop off and find off spaces. He was just, I felt like, aside from being physically outnumbered here by Mallorca, he just couldn't really find the spaces that he usually likes to pick up in the outside the box and then inside the box with the numbers that Mallorca put in there, and they defended their box really well. But yeah, it worked out in the end, and it was it probably is the kind of change. If it didn't work out, it would have been something that we would have been looking back on and thinking Valverde went too early with this. He picked Prados and just kind of misjudged the tone of the game and what was needed. But he obviously felt like Vesga on the half at the halftime mark was gonna come in and do something, and he did, and then he scored a penalty to add to that. Another one aside kind of from the main points we're gonna talk about, Julen Aguirre-Zabala, with a great penalty stop, looked a little bit shaky at times, I thought, and does look shaky, like a young goalkeeper would, but an important penalty stop that essentially put Athletic Club on the front foot in the penalty shootout, and then it was the penalty over the bar by Radojevic that I didn't say his name right, but that won it for Athletic Club. But Valverde picked his Copa del Rey goalie earlier in the season and stuck with him even when it became clear that they were going to make it to a semi-final and a final. They've got Spain's number one sitting on the bench, and Unai Simon and Aguirre-Zabala, you could see them, there's clips going around the two of them talking and stuff like that before the penalty shootout. Huge penalty stop by Aguirre-Zabala, but also justifies Valverde's decision to stick with him, and now Athletic Club have two goalkeepers who could easily start in any game, and their depth on goalkeeper is pretty much unmatched in Spain and probably beyond.
Yeah, it's one of those where I don't think Valverde, it was just a case of he knows he's got multiple keepers in his squad, and he decided he was going to play one competition just to give him that exposure. But I think it was more that in Aguirre-Zabala, he knows there's a very good goalkeeper there and he deserves to play in some respect. It's difficult, obviously, because you've got Spain's number one, Unai Simon, in there. But Aguirre-Zabala is one of those keepers that if you don't play him, there's a 100% chance he leaves because he's too good. If you play him to a certain extent, you might get to keep him for longer, but it's a tricky one because Unai Simon is 26 years old. He's probably got probably best part of 10 years left at the top level, you would say. You know, keepers can comfortably go on to 35 these days. So yeah, it's great for Aguirre-Zabala to have his moment in the Copa del Rey and to be, you know, a big part of it. He's made good saves along the way, not too many in general play in this match, but again, he's a player who's not played a lot. For him to have a starring role in the Copa del Rey win, you know, historic win, is great for him. And I don't really know what they do with him from this point on, because Unai Simon is not going anywhere. Very unlikely that he's going to play his way into knocking Simon out of the team. So, yeah, if he does go on to leave, just for the fact of he's very good and needs to play as much as he loves Athletic, be interesting to see which team he lands at. You'd have to think it'd probably be a top half side.
Yeah, for sure. And this is, I guess, the problem with Athletic Club. Not a problem, but something that you have to take into account with Athletic Club, in that you think, oh, yeah, that's fine. They've got a Copa del Rey winning goalkeeper here who has played with Spain underage youth groups coming through. Obviously got a huge future. He's young and has proven himself now. And we can sell him for 60, 80 million like they did with Kepa. But and that's fine. But they don't. That's not what Athletic Club wanted to be known as. That's not their modus operandi. That's not the end goal here. Oh, we make a load of money off guys. They're not producing players in order to turn them into profitable sales. They're producing them in order to contribute to Athletic Club's football team. And some other clubs were like, oh, grand, yeah, we'll sell them, but this isn't what Athletic Club do. And I was just thinking during the game and after the game and thinking a lot about Valencia actually recently in terms of how they've somehow managed to find themselves just outside of Europe or in the mix for a European spot. And we had them written off as relegation fodder. And in some ways, and this is maybe a discussion for another podcast with someone who knows more about the financial situations at clubs, but if you dedicate yourself wholly to, like the way we saw with Barcelona maybe years ago, and they've kind of gotten away from this, but if you dedicate yourself fully to playing academy players, giving them opportunities, not keeping within a certain wage structure, keeping within creating the environment where players want to stay and where the likes of Iñaki Williams had opportunities to leave and didn't, are you okay? You have to suck it up for a number of years maybe when you're not producing the talent that can push you into the top four or top six, but in the long term, are you better off from a financial standpoint? You're not just kind of living on the edge all the time, but also you create the environment where it is ultra competitive, and it is that little bit more satisfying when you do make a top six or a top four, because this for athletic clubs does everything. I'm not saying we have to get into this now, but in a way, if you're willing to commit to that, would you be better off? Is there teams probably looking at it going, maybe we should do this because the transfer market is just getting completely out of control. We can't keep buying players for 100 million, 120 million, 60 million. Let's just promote from within and we can become successful on the back of that.
Yeah, I think some teams, whether they thought that or not, have kind of stumbled into it as well this season, and it's paid off in a big way, like you say, with Valencia. I remember reading before the season that Fran Perez was like on the verge of joining Elche on loan, and they kind of accidentally kept him, and he, along with many others, came to the fore and drove a team way beyond what we expected from them at the start of the season. So yeah, it's funny. Spanish clubs doesn't seem like they're getting any richer in general besides the top sides. So it's one of those where we've seen so many examples this season of players coming out of the academy and helping the team immediately and probably beyond what any of them could afford in the market. Think of Isaac Romero at Sevilla. There's just lots of examples littered throughout the league. So yeah, I mean, no matter who you support, watching Athletic do what they do and win that trophy on Saturday, it was just so inspiring. And you kind of think, how lucky are those Athletic fans who get to live this? I read a really nice article in El País, and the title was Imagine Winning This Way, which just tells you, you know, you read the story of how it's happened on paper, and it sounds like a fairy tale, but it has happened for them. So again, yeah, I'm all for using Athletic as an example for everyone to follow, or at least those sides outside of the big three or four.
Yeah, definitely. But then there is occasions when you get a player like the player we're going to talk about now, who just kind of transcends that, and you kind of have to accept that at some point Nico Williams probably will make a step up to an Arsenal or Bayern Munich or someone like that. Watching Nico on Saturday, he was the only forward on Athletic Club's starting 11 to finish the game. And he's not just kind of roaming around the field picking up loose balls. He's like a very explosive player, and he lasted 120 minutes, and he was the difference maker here. He was the catalyst for everything that Athletic Club were trying to do. He was basically the number one man who Mallorca were trying to stop. He had a couple of chances that he potentially could have scored, but he didn't. He did finish the one that was offside really, really well, but obviously it was offside. And we're looking at a player here who you watch him and you're thinking, yeah, this guy is, he has superstar written all over him.
Definitely, yeah. He was the one player in the match who you could give the ball to, and he could open up the opposition's defensive shape without anybody else touching it. I think that's the best way to describe him. I mentioned that Copa del Rey final against Real Sociedad some years back, and you think, you know, that team without Nico Williams, you know, if they didn't have him on the night on Saturday, their job would just have been so much harder to get inside that Mallorca defensive shape and start to open up spaces. And yeah, he was the only forward that finished the game for Athletic. He was the only non-defender in terms of the outfielders that finished the game. So that tells you a lot about, you know, managers like Guardiola often speak about breaking down defensive blocks. If you don't have players that can dribble, it's just so incredibly difficult to do. So, yeah, we'll drop in the stat we had for Williams, which was he's assisted a goal in each of his last four games now, which takes him to 13 for the season in 30 appearances, which is the most of any player for a La Liga club across all competitions this season. So you're talking about production. Even if you just want to look at the numbers for a player, this guy is producing in a big way and at a level that I didn't expect he'd reach quite this early. I know assists can be volatile. They're not the best, you know, the absolute best way to judge a player's level of creation, but you know, you think of the assists that have made up that 13 this season. So many of them are driving to the byline, beating his man and cutting it back into the most dangerous zone on the pitch. So, yeah, obviously he got a very different assist in this game, which we could probably describe now.
Yeah, he had that assist for Ian Sanset's goal, who we're not even going to have time really to talk about. But Sanset, it's funny that during the under-21 Euros, last summer when me and Jamie were podcasting about that, and Gabri Vega was on the sideline, Luis De La Fuente went with Sanset, and there was a lot of question marks because Gabri Vega was kind of like the breakout star of La Liga last season, and Sanset hadn't really kind of gone to that next level, but Luis De La Fuente knew what he had in Sanset, and now we're looking at another player who is starting to really turn it up a notch. And I love watching Nico Williams, but I particularly like watching Sanset. He's got so much nuance to his game. He is just like he plays in that number 10 role, and he can create. He's technically brilliant. He can create out of nothing, receiving the ball with his back to goal, and just spins out of trouble so effortlessly. Most players need a first touch before they then turn and do it and into a more advantageous position. But Sanset is able to use his first touch to get away from players. And that in itself can create so many problems. And it does. Now, obviously, against Mallorca, once you do turn, you're then faced with three monster centre-backs, and you have to kind of do something within that. But Sanset, just absolutely fabulous again on Saturday night.
Yeah, a joy to watch. I don't know about you, but as soon as Nico threaded that through pass, I just, even though it'd been a struggle to that point, I thought he's not going to miss this. I trusted his first touch to be spot on and the finish to be firm. You know, 100%. Sanset, if Athletic could, you know, coming into the game, if they knew they were going to have one good chance in the game and they had to pick a player to be in front of it, I would pick Sanset, even though he's not the guy who's scored the most goals this season, just because he's, like I said, he's technically just so sharp. The quality is always there. He rarely kind of whiffs on shots and passes. He's just a brilliant player. And I think, because he's got Nico in the team and he's kind of the star face, Iñaki's the one with the most popularity, you would say. He's kind of hidden in that. Yeah. He's a real top class footballer, but it doesn't seem like he's, well, at least for the moment, that he's going to get attention from the real giants around Europe. Even though I think he could play at high level, it doesn't seem like there's going to be a real scrap over him, which I think plays to Athletic's favour, obviously, because he's an unbelievable player, could probably get there, but it doesn't seem like there's going to be a real scrap for him. I don't know. What do you think?
I was thinking about him on Saturday and then after the game, and I was just thinking about players who he's similar to, and maybe not in how he plays, but he's so similar to Griezmann in that you might look at him and think, well, yeah, what does he do? But then when you really watch him closely and you watch Athletic Club for a number of games, you're like, this guy is so important to them. He's technically so brilliant. And while he mightn't always have 15, 20 goals or 15 or 20 assists, he's always contributing throughout the game in a position and in an area of the field where he can progress the ball further forward and create trouble from almost nothing. And I think you're spot on, but at the same about big teams not scrapping over him, I think he could play. I could easily see him playing for Liverpool. Now, we don't know what's going to come with Klopp afterwards, but he's the kind of player I could see playing for Liverpool. But at the same time, if Athletic Club keep building the way they are, even if they don't make a top four this year, he'll have no problem staying at Athletic Club for the next 3, 4, 5 years or beyond that if the big teams don't come calling. But he will be an important piece of that team, even if he doesn't ever get the praise that he probably rightfully deserves. You said you'd give the chance to Ian Sunset, and I would agree, but there's another player who I would pick to and I would have no problem, Alex Bedinger, who took his penalty so well. Just a player who I really like and who obviously has been left out because Iñaki and Nico on either side, Bedinger can only really play on either side there. I don't think I've ever seen him playing more centrally. But do you think with Guruceta so limited, all the players who started, of all the players that started for Athletic Club, he was the outfield player with the fewest touches, and it just felt like it wasn't his night, wasn't his day, game didn't suit him. Do you think there was an argument to be made for bringing Bedinger on sooner, putting Iñaki up as the number 9, and because he's more physical than Guruceta, and then crashing the box a little bit more with Iñaki, and because it felt like there was a couple of crosses from Athletic Club low and drilled in where actually Nico got on the end of one in extra time that was turned away for a corner. But if they had more bodies pushing into the box, they probably could have got a little bit more joy from that. Do you think that's a change that Valverde could have made? Obviously, they won the game, so it doesn't matter. But is that something that you think Valverde considered or should have considered?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. Because I think you see, when he's not directly scoring goals, I think you see the best of Guruceta dropping off and involving himself in play, because he can then open up space for Nico and Iñaki to attack behind the opposition back line, but that space just didn't really exist in this game. So probably a case of stepping on each other's toes a bit more, because Athletic were camped in the opposition half for a lot of the time. And you've got, you know, when Vesga came on, Ruiz de Galarreta moved up probably into spaces that Guruceta would try and drop into and develop play. Second half, I think you saw as well that Sunset played a lot more on the left-hand side to combine with Nico Williams. If you look at his touch map, there's a big difference between first and second half. I think that left-sided pocket is probably where Guruceta likes to play most. You know, we spoke about him doing the Benzema light stuff, which always tends to happen on that left-hand side. So yeah, I think probably a game he got lost in a little bit, and the fact that Mallorca was so aggressive on stopping players being able to receive the ball in those areas and turn and face goal, you know, they just latched onto Marcus so quickly. So yeah, it's a difficult game, you know, with the back five plus Samuel Costa swarming everywhere, trying to put out fires. So yeah, contributed a lot this season, but probably not his best game in the final.
We've spoken a lot about Athletic Club, and we probably should have done this the other way around, but let's finish off now talking about Mallorca, because Javier Aguirre, just a legend of Spanish football, even though he's not Spanish, he's been around now long enough, and we've seen enough of him to put him into that legend category for sure. And he said after the game that he doesn't really know how much he has left, and he has rejected several offers from Mallorca now, and it looks like they feel like he has made a decision that he's not going to continue there beyond next season. They are currently sitting 15th in the table, and they are on 31 points, not entirely safe from relegation, although Almeria and Granada are pretty much gone, and it's only Cadiz now who could lift themselves up out of that and out of that relegation zone. And Mallorca are 6 points better off than them, so it looks like relegation isn't a possibility. They've made it to a Copa del Rey final, were very, very unlucky not to win it, and he can leave with his head held high after what he's done for Mallorca, kept them up in La Liga for a number of years now and solidified their place there. And but just on some of the names mentioned, they're creating a list apparently in Mallorca of managers who they might contact to bring in if Aguirre does decide to leave. The three of them are Diego Martinez, formerly of Granada and Olympiacos, Ruud van Nistelrooy, who I'm not sure who he's managed, I'm gonna have to look that up, and then Eder Sarabia, who recently got sacked by Andorra. Really couldn't be a bigger deviation from what they currently have, and if Sarabia is brought in, it's going to require a complete squad overhaul, I would imagine. But what do you make, firstly, of Aguirre leaving, potentially leaving, and those names lined up?
Well, firstly, I think he's still got quite a lot of work to do just yet. If you listen to him in the press conference after, those quotes you just mentioned, he also mentioned, his attention seemed to turn very quickly back to the league, even though it was still, you know, they'd just lost the final. And the fact that he said those things about having to play Real Madrid next, they have to go to Cadiz away at the end of this month, so there's still work to be done there to stay in this league. And I think he knows that with the fact that he referenced it, you know, in a delicate moment. But otherwise, yeah, that shortlist of managers is quite bizarre, really. I mean, Diego Martinez would fit stylistically, I would say, with the players they've got. Eder Sarabia, like you said, that is, you'd probably have to sell about 20 players and sign 20 more to try and get towards his style of play. But yeah, I don't know how he's made his way onto that shortlist. I do like Sarabia. I'm a fan of his work and how he likes to play football, but yeah, I think he's just on a one-man mission to manage teams in locations where he can make the most of his passion for cycling. He's been in Andorra. I think he's gonna he could go to the hotspot of Mallorca next. Then he can go manage Tenerife and cycle at Mount Teide every day.
Yeah, I was watching Andorra at the weekend, and not at the weekend. I was watching one of their games the other day. I can't remember what it was. It was on delay. And I decided that next winter I'm going there for a vacation because it just looks stunning there. Eder Sarabia. It's not the worst place to go cycling, I'd imagine. Not that I'm a cyclist at all. I won't be going cycling at all, but it just looks stunning. But yeah, on Mallorca, they play Real Madrid next at home, then Sevilla and then Cadiz both away. And then they've got Atletico Madrid, Las Palmas, Osasuna, Almeria, and Getafe. It does ease off slightly after the Real Madrid, Sevilla, Cadiz, and Atletico. But then, yeah, you're right. I said that relegation doesn't really look like a threat, but it absolutely could if Cadiz can string a couple of wins together, and if Mallorca don't win like as you would expect them not to win against Real Madrid this coming Saturday. So yeah, Aguirre does have a lot of work to do. Mallorca won't be counting on Primera action next year for sure, but it will be sad to see him leave. And yeah, it's kind of hard to make any sense of that list really now. It just feels like they've made a list of potential managers, and it doesn't even really matter at the moment. So that'll probably get whittled down, and Eder Sarabia might find himself off that list. Although Steve Nash, the former basketball player, is part of the ownership group there at Mallorca, so maybe he'll be thinking, I want to play something a little bit more aesthetically pleasing. Steve Nash obviously was a famous point guard who was all about creativity and that. And so that might be something that Steve Nash is thinking, let's get Edir Serabi in here and turn this into a more fun team to watch.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, actually. I don't know how much influence Nash has over the manager targets and things like that, but yeah, there's certainly parallels between basketball and football, and I'm sure he'd love to, if he has any say. I don't know what role he actually has there. Is he an investor, or I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I think he's part of the ownership group. I don't know what exactly his role is right now, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd love to try and play a more associative game. I guess Mallorca did kind of try that in last summer, and Aguirre mentioned it, that they wanted to try and play a bit more football. I feel like they've not really seen that through, that reverted kind of to type as the season's gone on. So maybe they'll have another crack at it in the summer, especially if Aguirre does go. But yeah, beyond that, unless you've nothing else to add on this one, I just wanted to ask you about your Castilla diaries from the weekend. Any stories to tell? Any stories or players that we should be aware of? I know that you and Carlo Ancelotti were both in attendance.
Yeah, no, Sergio Arribas was there as well, actually. Actually, when you go to Castilla games, there tends to be kind of a lot of ex-Real Madrid Castilla players there kind of knocking around and that, and you can see them. And the stand is so small and it's all kind of congested, that one area that you do tend to see them. But you said it, oh, let's mention this, and I didn't get a chance to tell you, let's not mention it, because there's nothing really to write home about. But kind of disappointing, really. And you'd wonder now what's going to happen with Raul. They're not safe from relegation from that division. I went there with the hopes of seeing a Nico Paz masterclass. I've been told that he's kind of really lighting things up for Real Madrid Castilla and training with the first team occasionally. But he looks like a player who's just devoid of confidence. Mario Martin, who's a really aggressive central midfielder who's been linked with Girona. And I text Jamie, told him I was going. He was like, yeah, keep an eye on Mario Martin, he's really aggressive. Mario Martin was sent off, 2 yellow cards. I text Jamie and say, yeah, he is pretty aggressive, as it turns out, and two kind of, not clumsy fouls, two fairly kind of orange cards, you know, he bulldozed two guys out of the way. But yeah, Cordoba are actually at the top of the league, they're not top, but they're second in the league. And it was a classic case of a young, really, really young Castilla team. And this happens all the time. Castilla were kind of all over them. Cordoba just kind of soaked it up. And me and my mate were there, and he was like, this is classic, like Real Madrid doing all this fancy footwork and dominating the ball, and Cordoba were just going to hit them for a corner and that'll be it. But I don't think it was a corner that they scored from, but yeah, Cordoba just kind of caught them, went 2-0 up then, and then that was it. So yeah, nothing really to write home about. Nico Paz is disappointing, but this is one game and he's young. Mario Martin, very aggressive. Marvel, the centre back, gave away a penalty, and he looked good for spells, but then was clumsy because they were 1-0 down, and he was kind of getting a little bit upset and yeah, a little bit silly. But yeah, Raul looked a little bit despondent after, and I wonder what's going to happen with him at the end of the season now, where he's going to go, if it's time for him maybe to make a step somewhere. I'm sure it is. He's been there now for like 3 years, I think, so nothing really to write home about. But it was a lovely day in Valdebebas. The sun was shining and looks like the weather is turning here, so hopefully catching more games in the coming weeks. I think I've got Alcorcón and Villarreal B lined up for next Monday night, if anyone's interested in that.
Oh, a big win for Alcorcón last night. I was watching that.
Yeah, massive, massive win for them. And actually, that game on Monday night now is really important. Alcorcón could stay in the league. And it's kind of nice to have, living in Madrid, it's nice to have the more teams up further the table you have, the better. So, hoping they stay up. Anyway, that's enough Copa del Rey analysis. That's enough Castilla analysis. And that's enough Alcorcón analysis for 1 week. From myself and Jamie here at La Pausa Pod, it is adios.